Now make some steps toward the palace that stands at your left, which in our journey we have walked around. It's the Bologna town hall, known as Palazzo da Curzio. Before concentrating on the last hour of our story, look to your right, in the direction of the Statua del Nettuno, the Neptune statue. Right between Via Rizzoli and Via Indipendenza, there's a tower that imposes with its robust outline that is a consolidated part of the urban landscape, even if the buildings around it are progressively covering it. For sure, in the 19th century it stood out more, when the Canton dei Fiori, that is the part of the street with some flower shops, was occupied by a box-standard building with a canopied balcony. It was lower than the present house in full Renaissance style that lowers significantly the vertical elan of the Scapitaire, owned by the family with the same name. Scappare Enzo scappa, ronking Enzo run. One of the best city legends traces back the name of this family to the failed escape of the poor King Enzo. There are a lot of stories about the young king in Bologna, started from the golden wire long as the city wall perimeter that the Emperor Frederick promised to the Bologna citizens to have his son back, to his love with young Bolognese ladies that competed to conquer his heart and bed, and most of all, his attempts to escape. One of the most famous apparently happened in 1265, and you can find this episode represented in two tiles, although very corroded, in the side pillars of the Palazzo del Podestà. Thanks to the help of a brentatore, a wine carrier, as legend has it, Re Enzo was able to exit from the palace, hidden in a tub that the man had taken on his shoulders. He would have made it if it wasn't for a woman who saw the blonde hair of the king stand out of the tub border from the window of a nearby house and started to shout, "Scappa, scappa!" In this way, the plan was uncovered for Re Enzo, and so they became named Scappi, and consequently their tower. For sure, it would have been standing out even more against the horizon before the 17th century, or more correctly before the building of St. Peter's Cathedral, which is now the background for the tower, without considering that originally it could have easily measured even more than the present 39 metres. Built with the technique of the sack walls, muratura sacco, but wait a minute, I'm almost at the end of my story and I haven't yet explained how the towers were built. We talked about the duration of works, in part about some of the techniques, but not about the engineering system. Well then, first of all, there was no real product, but only a series of simple instructions were written, so they would have been easily understood by the builders. The system used to paint on the ground the perimeter of the building was quite curious. The master builder had three ropes with knots made at multiples of 3, 4 and 5, let's say 15, 20 and 25 feet. These ropes, put on the ground, formed a right-angled triangle and so, by moving them importantly, they formed also a square. Then, the excavation was carried out until a sufficiently solid layer of clay was reached to hold the weight of a tower, about 6 metres under the ground level, and a series of oak trunks about 2 metres long were inserted to compact the soil using large hammers. Then the foundations were made with a complex mixture of lime, stones, gravels and sand with a thickness of about 15 feet. You must take into account that a Bolognese foot was long, a big foot, about 38 centimetres. Once the foundations had been made, the building of the base was started, with the by now to you famous well-squared selenite blocks put on top of each other. From there, the aforementioned sack walls were made. Every 20 rounds of squares, 3 or 4 of the canonical bridge holes were made, as you have seen in all the towers we've met. As the internal wall grew vertically, its thickness was diminished, both to reduce stress on the structure and to create support points for the various floors, and finally to maximise the space available. The last part was made of bricks only, it was noticeably less solid than the rest, and that's the reason for the frequent cut-offs, being them spontaneous, real collapses, or purposely done. Maybe the same fate was assigned to our tower, the Scappi, or rather, maybe because it was constructed in a late period, almost 1220, in this case we can talk about an unfinished work. The Scappi family was long-lived, until 1707, and from that time on, the same old turnover of inheritance started.